about the WSA Community Pharmacy and a little bit about how it all started and its connection to the university originally. And that's where we're going to start, is just if you could kind of tell me when and where the idea originated.
The idea actually originated a little bit before I became involved in it. I had finished pharmacy school in 1970. I had to do a year's internship, which I did in Milwaukee, at a hospital. I found that I didn't really care for hospital pharmacy that much. I didn't really want to live in Milwaukee. So I moved back to Madison without a job. And I connected up with a person named Bruce Stein, who was a pharmacist, had a PhD in pharmacy, and was now going to law school. And he had just, he was in the hospital with a hernia operation, and someone told me that he was looking for a pharmacist. So I went and visited him at the hospital, and he told me about WSA wanting to start a pharmacy, and that since he was from the pharmacy school, and the pharmacy school was also wanting to start some sort of a student run pharmacy, some sort of a situation where pharmacy students could get practical experience, he thought he might be able to work it out to combine those two ideas and start a pharmacy up. So I thought that sounded like an interesting idea, and so I got to meet some of the people who were involved in the project from WSA, mostly senators and officials in the Wisconsin Student Association that were fairly politically active, and also some people from the law school who were also friends with the people from WSA who were doing some of the legwork, and people who were originally involved with the WSA store, which had been in existence for a number of years already. I can't remember, maybe 3-4 years, something like that. And this was in about September of 1971, and at that time it was decided that you know, some money needed to be solicited, so there was this idea that we would sell these non-redeemable bonds. I think they were like $1 apiece, and we would sit in front of the WSA store with our table, and the students could buy these bonds, give their dollar, and support, you know, what was hopefully going to be a new project that WSA wanted to introduce to the campus area.
Can you tell me a little bit about the WSA store? I don't really
The WSA store was actually in the space that this library is in now. This used to be a row of fairly old buildings. The WSA store here was here. There was a bar and a couple of other things. It's kind of vague in my memory at this point. But WSA had started a store kind of like a prehistoric sort of Mifflin Co-op sort of situation where there was some, you know, there were snacks being sold, pop, records, you know, stuff that kids wanted at that time that were going to school here. And it was done in a co-op sense. But I may be wrong about this. It may not actually have been a co-op at that time, because WSA set us up pretty much as a regular corporation. And they pretty much stacked the board of directors with WSA senators. And when the pharmacy was set up, that also was set up in a similar sort of way. There were lots and lots of senators, a worker or two, a couple pharmacists, but WSA pretty much controlled the board at that time. And I'm pretty sure that's what they did with the store. There was actually, at the time, a lot of divisiveness about starting a pharmacy within WSA, because the store had to give up its health and beauty aid area, and this was going to be given to the pharmacy as part of the financing of this new business. And a lot of people felt that when that happened, it would detract from the store, and so a lot of people who were running it and, you know, had some more practical experience in the store were not very happy about that. There came a time in 1971 where It was found, maybe this was even before 1971, where it became clear that this building was, these buildings were going to be knocked down in this, you know, I think probably what it was Helen C. White Memorial Library was going to have an addition, that's what it was, because I think the library was actually here already, but they just added on next door to it and knocked down half this block. In fact, I think the university bookstore used to be on this side of the street, and then they moved over across the street. I think that's the way it worked. And
so WSA got part of the funds from running this store?
They got part of it. Well, that I couldn't tell you either. I'm not sure if they, made any money off that. But they definitely ran the place. I assume that there was some money being made. But in those days, business was not, and business practices were not something that was first on the agenda. Other things were first. How good a deal could you give somebody, and how much service could you kind of provide? And the ideas about business came later. In fact, that was the way it was at the pharmacy, too.
But they were concerned about you drawing attention away from their...
Yes,
services.
Exactly. And not only that, but they were going to lose their space, which was really a prime space on the street. And they were going to, at a later time when the pharmacy kind of came together, into 1972, that they were going to be in the basement of a building which was not that readily accessible. In fact, it's the space that houses, what's the name of that? I can't remember the name. Goodwill here on State Street. That's where they were, and we were going to be the floor above them in the back of this building, as a pharmacy. So that was also not a real good thing. And in fact, it ended up over the next couple of years, they lost quite a bit of business. They lost quite a bit of money. The management was very poor. Employees were starting to steal from the business, and within a relatively short time, WSA gave this up to some private people who bought it, and then they went out of business a short time later, too. It just deteriorated very quickly, actually. I'd say it took a couple of years, but it happened that way.
You've talked a little bit about, you've brought in the idea of how the times were different.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd really like to hear a little bit more about how the social and political context affected the formation of this pharmacy.
Mm-hmm. Well, for people who went to the university in the 60s like I did, I went through an awful lot of changes. And, I came through there going through pharmacy school and, being on the streets against the war, during most of my time. And it was pretty exciting time to be here in Madison. And when I moved away from Madison to Milwaukee to this kind of much more conservative place, it was like, I just can't live here, It's just not the thing I want. I want to go back to Madison and be more active. And when I met the people from WSA, many of them were seniors or, fifth-year students who had been there through the 60s. They were actually much more in the front lines of the political activity than I was. I was just on the street. I never really got involved with, organized activity. And when I met these people, and I thought that they had a good idea here about this pharmacy, I wanted to join that. And one of the big things in that time was, all institutions were suspect to, most of the people that were, considered on the left, so to speak, in Madison. And one of the targets of this, this institutionalized, ripping off of the people, as they called it, was this sort of monopolistic pharmacy that was around town called Rennebaum's. And even though Rennebaum's was a relatively small outfit, they had maybe 25 stores or something like that, which was bought out by Walgreens at a later date, somewhere in the late 70s or something like that, were you know, they were just looked at as, you know, exploiting the students and exploiting people and charging high prices, and they were involved with the drug companies who were, you know, also in this, you know, kind of whole scheme of things. So they thought that creating a pharmacy of their own, a pharmacy for the people, that they would be able to counter some of these so-called abuses that they saw on campus. Now, there was talk about, you know, prices off campus being, you know, a lot cheaper for certain items than they were on campus, and, you know, stuff that, you know, may have been true, may not have been true. I don't really even know exactly about that, but there was enough animosity towards them that they felt that they wanted to make an alternative. And in those days, a lot of people wanted to just make an alternative culture, you know, so they wanted to get into all the different institutions that they could get into, and WSA had enough people who were willing to work for that end that they could get some things going. They had a lot of people who knew enough about law that they could, you know, get the papers together and the permits together and all these things together to pull this off. So that was, you know, kind of the motivating force. It was, you know, it was somewhat altruistic, you know, somewhat naive probably, but also, you know, realistic in some sense that some of these things could be done with some work, and people, you know, share the time and effort to do that, although with oftentimes plenty of squabbling and, you know, plenty of bickering and plenty of problems in the process. And, you know, people had this kind of goal in mind, and they ended up, you know, working together to get it together.
Who do you remember being initially involved in the planning of it?
Well, I wish I could remember, you know, this was 22 years ago. I wish I could remember the names of all these people. I really don't. I know Linda Larkin was one person who was there, Linda Bidoff, Tom Schneider, who's a DA in Milwaukee at this point. He's a fairly prominent DA there, and Bruce Stein, who I talked to you about, who was the pharmacist. I think Judge Frankel was involved in this. So there were like a lot of people who. You know, who came into fairly prominent positions, and especially the lawyers. They are the ones that helped a lot with, you know, getting this together. I don't know where most of those people are anymore. Occasionally we see a face wondering, you know, if the store is still alive, and you know, it's evolved so much over the years that, you know, people just don't recognize it. I'm probably one of the few people that's remained with it over all this length of time. I kind of wanted to say something about the pharmacy school aspect of this, which was where Bruce Stein was kind of the driving force to get us to come together. And the other cultural thing that that might be interesting for, you know, people who are going to listen to this is just the way people looked. You had people, hippies, people that looked like hippies who were students who were, you know, trying to do this. And when Bruce tried to present this proposal to the pharmacy school to combine this, they were just incredulous that they, you know, we would even ask about this. And they went ahead and just, you know, did their own school and, you know, made their own pharmacy, which is still going at Breeze Terrace. And so they didn't really want anything to do with us, and as a lot of other people also thought, even, you know, the pharmacy examining board and some of the other people that we had to deal with, you know, that we were just a bunch of hippies who were going to sell drugs to anybody that wanted them. And in fact, that was, I remember even reading an article in the paper about that, asking us that exact question, and we had to come out and say, well, no, we're not going to do that, you know, we have to obey the law and do all this sort of stuff. And everybody was wondering about our credibility and wondering whether we could pull this off or not. So just the way we looked and just our politics and just a lot of things separated us from, you know, kind of the mainstream university and the pharmacy school and all these other people. So we ended up, you know, going our own way with this and ended up setting up the pharmacy, which took about a year from 1971 when I first got involved in the September of 71 till 25th of September of 1972 when the doors opened. And during that time, we had to scout out a building and a couple of places that we would have liked fell through. We ended up finally getting the back half of a building. The front half was Mary Antoine's dress shop. We ended up having to get an easement through the back of a Rennebaum's drugstore, which was very ironic. And several years later, we lost our easement there, and we had to twist the pharmacy 90 degrees inside to get another entrance, which went down an alley from State Street. And that was a terrible weekend. We can get into that if you want to a little bit, but we ended up getting this easement. The old Happy Medium and Soap Opera were in the building that we went right by to get to the pharmacy. And we started off with about, actually I should maybe tell a little bit. Most of the work was done by volunteers. The shelves were all built by volunteers. Some of it was donated from old stuff that the store, the other store, didn't need anymore. A lot of it was donated lumber. We had to clean up this room, which was the lunch room of a women's dorm that was not being used anymore, which backed on an alley on Langdon Street. So we were pinched in there between Langdon Street and State Street.
At the beginning, people did come through a Langdon Street?
No, it was a Lake Street.
On
Lake Street, which was the street crossing Langdon and State Street. And it was right behind the Walgreens store now, right between the Walgreens, and I believe there's some sort of a blood donation center there, a plasma center or something like that. And we had a door there, and that's where people came into the directly into the pharmacy. We had a sign up in the back that somebody was very interested in the pharmacy, donated his time and effort. Les Roosh was his name, and he's still around town somewhere. He was into computers and stuff like that, but he wanted to make us a sign. He did a nice job on it, and unfortunately the sign kind of fell apart after a number of years in the weather. But it was kind of one of those old hippie signs, and it's gone. We have a couple pictures around somewhere yet. And we opened the door on September 25th, 1972, with $8,000 we had, maybe it was $5,000, I think, that we had gotten from the $1 bonds, non-redeemable bonds that we sold to the students. We got several thousand dollars worth of health and beauty aids from the store, which was finally worked out in very reluctant sort of situation for the store. And we got $8,000 loan from the Daily Cardinal newspaper. And
can you talk a little bit about that?
I don't know the ins and outs of that very well. It was negotiated by WSA and the Daily Cardinal. I mean, there was a lot of camaraderie, because there was a focus against the war, and there was that last year, I think the National Guard was on campus a couple of times, once during a black strike, and there was a TA strike, and then the Cambodia business, and it was like there was something going on all the time. So the Cardinal was staffed with people at that time who were pretty much in the same vein as people from WSA. And there were disagreements about stuff, but basically they were heading the same direction. And so the Cardinal had some money apparently, and they decided to lend it. And that money was paid back by the pharmacy as it grew. And it was absolutely necessary in order to open the business. Without it would have been very difficult, because there just wasn't enough. There wasn't enough stock in the business at all. The first day we were open, we had a pretty busy day. We ran out of stuff because birth control pills and things like that we weren't expecting people to transfer their prescriptions over. But we got quite a bit of business the first day, And from the first day on, this business has grown for 20 years. Just, you know, one year after another, it's better.
And with its start, you included things besides you had over-the-counter items as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The whole time.
Yeah. We were strictly a pharmacy. We had no, we had no alternative sort of remedies like we have now. And, you know, that's a little bit further down, the history of this. But we had, you know, aspirin and Tylenol and all the brand name stuff. And, in fact, generic things weren't that available in the early 70s yet. That kind of came a little bit later into the pharmacy business. We carried all the prescriptions that are drugs that were needed for filling prescriptions that any pharmacy would carry. We had to pass an exam by the state pharmacy examining board, and we had to have all the equipment and all the sinks and everything that's required to open up a pharmacy. We had to jump through all the hoops, and we did it. And that was kind of my responsibility to help with. And Bruce Stein, he did a little bit, but he was going to school at that time, so he couldn't really do everything in that area. But I'm the one that pretty much ordered the stuff to set up, and I didn't really, I had just been out of pharmacy school for a short time. It was a real new experience for me, and I'm sure we made some mistakes in terms of the buying and that sort of stuff. But we managed to do it okay with the money we had. Probably the less money you have, the less mistakes you make in that sort of a situation. And after we got going, we knew what was going to sell and what wasn't going to sell, and we just got better at running the pharmacy.
Did you take your lead from other co-ops? Did you feel like you kind of had other co-ops to form?
Well, the WSA store was the kind of main business that WSA modeled the pharmacy after. We really technically we weren't a co-op at that point. In fact, technically we became a co-op in October of 1991.
Yeah.
What's
the technical? Did you consider yourself a co-op before?
Well, no. We were going to be a cooperatively run business, and we hoped that we would, get, workers who would feel good about working there and about giving information and about selling the products, and workers who were committed to, at that point, not a clear idea of what was going on. The co-op movement started more in the food area, in Mifflin Street and Willie Street, started about the same time. Mifflin Street is actually a couple of years older than we were already. I think they started in 68 or something like that. That would have been 4 years already, 4 years older. So WSA was more, they were more into really a corporate approach to things. They incorporated us as a Wisconsin corporation. They had a board of directors, which they, like I told you, stacked with senators. And that became a real problem in a short time because we never could get a quorum together for a meeting. There must have been 20 people on the board, and we needed a two-thirds quorum or something like that. Nobody ever came. So within a few months, it became obvious that if we're going to set any policy or anything like that, it would have to be done internally. And in the process, a few people kind of gained the power in the business, which ended up being the pharmacists, because they were there, they had to know the stuff, and they had to make the decisions. So they just were, made like that. We started with 60 volunteers originally, and maybe one kind of more permanent worker who kind of oversaw this. Some of the WSA people came in and volunteered for a while. I think the volunteer business went on for quite a number of months, maybe even for some of the volunteers, slowly, as we became a better and better business, we were able to pay people, and as that happened, we had less and less volunteers and more paid staff, and the volunteers didn't become as important a factor. But in the early stages, without volunteers, sometimes staffing an hour or two at a time, all coordinated over, what were we open? I think some days we were open 12 hours. It was quite a task just to keep people there and to be able to, and train them to do anything at all, run registers, clean the place up, whatever. But it was amazing. it worked out, and people were very cooperative, and they just thought this was great because it was, you know, something that was, you know, had some, you know, altruistic meaning for them, I think, somehow. And some of those people ended up staying and becoming workers in the pharmacy for a number of years after that.
When you touched a little bit on how WSA was involved in that, I'm wondering if there were other supporters, early supporters of the pharmacy. It sounds like students within the law school, there were certain ones.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it was really WSA. WSA, some of these students who were friends of people or were in were in law school and happened to be, a lot of the WSA people were in law school. That's part of the connection there. The Daily Cardinal, the old WSA store, and Bruce Stein, who was the pharmacist who kind of had enough experience to be able to set up a pharmacy. And the students who supported us, and the people who were willing to come to shop at this pharmacy from the very first day it opened, those were the supporters. There were some detractors. We had some negative articles about this thing in the paper. There were some people at the pharmacy school and also at the student health service that really didn't want to, you know, see us get into this. They, you know, it was more of a cultural sort of thing almost. You know, they didn't, you know, they saw us as a bunch of scraggly hippies, and that was all they could see, I think. And so, it was kind of more of a nebulous effort. I mean, we didn't really have that many supporters in many ways. These people did this on their own, and we started with nothing. You know, maybe $18,000 worth of stuff altogether. That's not very much to set up a business and be able to make a go of it. And everybody thought we would fail in a few months anyway. Nobody thought that we would make it.
So as you started to go and maybe run into some community negative response, were there certain people or organizations that kind of came to back you, or was it pretty much a?
No, we were pretty much on our own. I think the main people that were worried about us in the early stages was the pharmacy examining board. And they also were, you know, they were a little nervous about whether we were going to comply with the law and whether, you know, we were going to sell drugs illegally and, you know, that sort of stuff. You know, they're also coming from a different sort of cultural place at that point, and they didn't really know us. I mean, the guy who inspected us came in, he had a flat top, you know, and here were all these, you know, long-haired people in this pharmacy, some of which were pharmacists, and then there was Bruce, who was kind of the kind of a little bit straighter-looking guy who was kind of the, you know, can I say, the buffer between us and the pharmacy examining board. And you know, they must have seen that it was weird, but within a relatively short period of time, they could tell that we were going to comply with their laws, that we were going to do everything above board, that we weren't going to be doing crazy things with drugs and stuff like that. And then they ended up inspecting us less and less, and, you know, we probably had as good a filing system, as good a retrieval system. We were probably on top of our drugs and narcotics and stuff in ways better than most pharmacies in the state. So they came to know that we weren't that we were trying to be legitimate, that we weren't trying to get away with anything or anything like that. So they loosened up and they mellowed out after a while, and it was fine. You know, most people, once they saw that we were trying to, you know, just run a business, they kind of let us go. I mean, that's kind of the way this country is anyway. You know, if you want to run a business, no one's going to hassle you about it, basically, as long as you're complying with the laws. So we didn't really get that much opposition. The opposition was more kind of a grumbling about, you know, the way we looked and, kind of just the fact that we would be in existence that, or, you know, kind of denigrated our ability to maybe pull this off. But it really wasn't that much opposition. I think Bruce was kind of disappointed that it didn't work out with the, pharmacy school, because that was his milieu. He really wasn't very comfortable with, you know, some of the people at WSA, I don't think, and some of the you know, kind of hippie types that got involved with it because of other reasons. And so, but he was, you know, he went along with it, and he helped us anyway. But there really wasn't, I don't think, a lot of terrible opposition. I can't say that.
Do you want to elaborate at all on what the philosophy, what you felt the initial philosophy of the pharmacy was?
Uh-huh. You touched on it. A little bit. I'd say the main thing we wanted to do was to provide, you know, kind of in those days, the rhetoric was, you know, the best medical care and products at the lowest priceable possible, at lowest prices possible for people to have easy access to, something like that. And that was pretty much what we did. But you know, when you run a business, after a while, there are realities to that business that you don't really think about when you're, you know, when you haven't had the experience with it. And it became pretty obvious after a while that most of the pharmacies were running, they weren't really ripping anybody off. They had their costs, and we found out that we had our costs too. And so it became necessary to charge what we needed to charge in order to stay alive. And we ended up doing that. We ended up paying the pharmacist probably a lot less at the beginning than other pharmacists got paid. And so most of the pharmacists that we had there, including myself, were willing to work for less money for the experience, the idealism, and you know, all the other stuff that went along with that. So that probably brought a lot of labor costs down. So we were able to compete, you know, with most of the pharmacies in the city, I think we did okay. And then we probably got some business from people who, in fact, I know we got a lot of business because not everybody was political in those days, and we got a lot of people who came into the pharmacy because they shopped around for prescription prices, and we had decent prices on a lot of our stuff. Even though you have, you know, some sort of philosophy, you know, there are compromises you sometimes have to make with that. And over the years, that, you know, philosophy has, you know, remained fairly consistent, although we've, you know, kind of fine-tuned it a little bit, changed it a little bit here and there. And, you know, with the times later on, there were some things that happened that, that, you know, made people look at the pharmacy in a different sort of way, too, as people, you know, needed to make more of a living. As times got a little tougher in the 80s, you know, there are a lot of changes from the 70s through the 80s and even up till 1990 that, you know, maybe you might want to get into a little bit too.
Okay, I'm back with Peter Kiesch, and on February 27th, 1992, in the Memorial Library. And Peter, we were going to continue a little bit here now and have you talk about the evolution.
Okay. From 1972, when we opened the doors, till 1976 was a tremendous growth period for the pharmacy. We were one of the first pharmacies that started using generic drugs here in Madison to a great degree, and offering that as an alternative to the brand name drugs, which were oftentimes quite a lot more expensive. And in the process, we also started repackaging a lot of things. We would offer, you know, people could bring their containers back and you get some money off. And you know, we ended up getting a reputation for having generic over-the-counter drugs, chlorpheniramine, aspirin, you know, various things that we packaged ourselves with our own funky labels on them. And people liked that. They, you know, it was kind of a friendly touch, and we would give people a lot, you know, somewhat better deal than they would get at a regular drugstore. And we offered people a job in that sense. You know, we had some, you know, people had to do the packaging and make the labels and all that sort of stuff. In that process, the pharmacist started accumulating an awful lot of power because they had to direct this. One of the pharmacists who was involved in that was Bill Pagel, who came into the picture almost immediately after we opened up. Another pharmacist was Jane Greischer, who still works with the pharmacy now. In fact, she's the chief pharmacist. That's her official title at the pharmacy. And she worked there on a part-time basis. But Bill was real intent on getting things together. And Bill, I think, put, if I remember right, I think he put some of his own money into the pharmacy to kind of speed things along a little bit, because we were really undercapitalized, and that helped get a certain part of the business together. He really did an incredible amount of work. He worked long hours, and he didn't get paid all that much. And in that process, as we became more successful, and there were more and more people getting paid, and he was looked on as being the boss, because as time went on, after about several months, WSA pretty much dropped out of the picture, because we never could get quorums together for their meetings. They kind of told us, well, go ahead, go on your own. And we didn't get any official sort of recognition of this until the Vargian administration, which I think was 76 or 77, somewhere in there. And then they decreed that we were officially on our own, that they had no more to do with WSA as the Wisconsin Student Association, but we managed to, we still kept our name and all that. But that didn't happen till much later. In that process, we also had hired a lawyer to kind of figure out where we were, as a corporation and all that sort of stuff. So we started doing a lot of things on our own, and in that process, Bill accumulated a lot of power. And he was a good worker. He did a lot of good things for the pharmacy. And I ended up kind of being a mediator between the people who were workers who wanted to have a little bit more say in what was going on, and Bill, who pretty much, pretty much did a lot of the work and put a lot of energy into directing people to whatever needed to be done. In the middle of that, about 1974, we also had to go through a terrible process. We lost our access to the pharmacy off Lake Street, and some people ascribed it to the fact that that we were cutting into Walgreens' profits, and all of a sudden they wanted to make it rough for us. The landlord actually, Walgreens didn't own that building. I don't think there was a landlord that they got, that they rented the space from. I'm not quite sure about that, but I think that's the way it was. And there was all sort of talk that, they were trying to sabotage us and this sort of thing. It may or may not have been true. I'm not exactly sure about that. I suppose you could go back into the newspaper articles at the time to see what they said about it. It's really not totally clear in my head. Of course, we were thinking the worst. But nevertheless, the fact was that we had lost our access, that the right-of-way was no longer available to us. We had to brick up the entrance. I mean, it had to be blocked up, completely cemented up. Then we had to find another entrance. So we did see that we had access to the building from State Street through the alley next to Mary Antoine's dress shop, because we were directly behind Mary Antoine's. That entailed cutting a hole through the wall, building a stairway down into a little bit lower level where we were perched, switching the whole pharmacy 90 degrees. I mean, we had to take one wall and put it to the next wall, another wall, put it to that wall. And we did that as a group in one weekend. We had to do that. Otherwise, we'd have lost a lot of business, and we just had to do it. It was a terrible experience. It was, it alienated everybody. People were fighting, and it was just awful to be there to work to do that. We managed to do it. We got the place together, and we opened up the doors, and in the time that we had allotted, but a lot of tempers were flaring, and a lot of people got their feathers ruffled a little bit, I think, and. In the process, there was, a little bit more alienation between Bill and some of the workers, and so I ended up kind of being the mediator somewhat between the pharmacists and the workers to some degree. I was the full-time pharmacist, and so I was there quite a bit of the time, so I tried to, mediate this a little bit. But in 1976, I decided that I, you know, needed to take some time off. So my wife and I took a 3.5 month vacation. I got another pharmacist to cover my hours, and in the process, the workers and Bill came into direct contact. And when I came back, this was in the winter of 76, and when I came back in the spring of 76, there was a full-blown revolution going on. And there were secret meetings, and the workers were revolting, and there was going to be a strike, and this or that. Everybody was, you know, a little bit afraid of Bill, probably unnecessarily so, I thought. But when I came back, this is what was going on. And so basically the workers wanted to reorganize, and it was decided that Bill would be confronted and then he would be given the chance to work within this new collective structure that we wanted to run ourselves as. And he, you know, reluctantly agreed to it, but he just couldn't fit in. And so by September, he basically, I mean, he was fired in a sense, but, you know, basically everybody knew that he probably wasn't going to be able to work within this new structure. And it was really too bad because he really had done, you know, quite a bit of work, but a lot of people didn't, you know, trust him. And there was just, some problems there that couldn't be worked out. So Bill left, and we started running ourselves as a collective. From 1976 to 83, this collective functioned pretty well. Business increased every year. We also, at that time, started getting into a few more of what I'd call alternative health care issues. In other words, we would carry a few health foods. We started getting into vitamins. We started generic packaging of vitamins and that sort of stuff, kind of more of a health aspect to the store. We were also the first pharmacy that refused to sell cigarettes. That was one thing we did right from the beginning. We said we aren't going to sell cigarettes here, and that was, you know, that was kind of different for a pharmacy to do in the early 70s. But the trend definitely at the pharmacy in the late 70s was towards alternative health care. For me personally, I was so much into it that I kind of cut my hours back to almost nothing from 1979 to 1983. And I worked in a partnership that started an herb store on the south side of town, and then we also bought a homeopathic pharmacy in Chicago that we ran for a number of years, but my business relationship with this person didn't work out at all. But I learned a lot in the process. And in 1983, landlord told us that we would have to make a decision about what we were going to do with the building, because Marie Antoine was going to move out, or he was giving us all the option of either moving out or we would have to take the whole space and refurbish it at, you know, a much higher rent than at that time we thought we could afford. As it turned out, we decided not to stay in that space. There was a lot of debate about this within the collective, and we were very split on this. We ended up moving up to the corner of State and Gorham, where we are now, as a result of this, with a very split crew about this, because this was uptown, and we were moving uptown, and to some people we were selling out. We were, you know, going for the, you know, the big bucks and the high rent, and a lot of people didn't like that. But if we would have stayed in the location we were at, which is now the location of the Pizza Hut, we would have had to spend an awful lot of money also. So we thought that it would be better for us to move. The majority went out, and it was better for us to move to the location on State and Gorham, a space that we could, you know, move into by just fixing it up the way we wanted to, whereas the other one had a lot of work to do, and it was an older space. And we just, you know, kind of, the energy was for moving out. Also, because we were getting into this much larger space, we had to make a decision about what we were going to put into this space. And since I had been working part-time and my business venture wasn't working out very well with my partnership and these other two small businesses, I told them that I would try to get together, you know, kind of more of an alternative health food thing with herbal remedies and homeopathic remedies and all the stuff that is available from, you know, that's called alternative or holistic medicine. And I must have convinced enough people to do this, because that's what we decided to do. So the whole upstairs at the, you know, Gorm Street address, which is actually 341 State Street is the address, but it's on Gorm Street's side of that building, now has all of those things, which, you know, really makes this kind of an alternative pharmacy. We're, you know, one of the only pharmacies around that has an extensive and alternative section, as it does, you know, prescription section.
I'd like to talk a little bit about what it meant to be a collective.
Okay. In the early stages of the collective in 1976, I think there were about 9 or 10, maybe 11 people working at the pharmacy, yeah, somewhere around that range. Most of our ages were pretty close together. The chances of having a group of people come together around the same wage was not an issue, because you had pharmacists who were, you know, kind of professional people who weren't going to work for the same wages that a regular worker was working with, but people were willing to, you know, like, if it isn't, you know, outrageous big difference between the pharmacist's salary and the worker's salary, as long as the workers had votes in the collective, they were willing to work with that. And so we compromised this. We started making some money. We started talking about, you know, getting health insurance and, you know, some benefits, vacation time, and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And, you know, most of the workers were very happy to work, you know, in this structure where they at least could, you know, say, well, this is, you know, I have some say in this business, and, you know, I have some, you know, I can vent my frustrations, I can, you know, get my point of view across, I can make changes, whatever needs to be done. And that's what's nice about what's working in a collective is all about. And it was also at a time when, you know, people's ages were, you know, somewhat closer together, and we had a nice core group of people. Many of them had been there from the beginning. And, you know, the politics weren't always the same, you know, for people. And we would sometimes have, you know, meetings that would, you know, go late into the night because we couldn't, you know, figure out, you know, how to deal with some sort of issue. And, you know, people would have strong disagreements, but we always, you know, worked it out usually, and we actually had a very good time. We would meet socially, and we had some very nice parties outside of the pharmacy. It was a real nice group of people that you know, ended up working there. In fact, many of these people still come back, and, you know, some of them I've kept touch with over the years. The main thing was that the business was growing, and we were actually starting to make some money. We had gotten to the point now where, you know, you know, kind of in moments of you know, whimsical kind of craziness, we would say, well, we're going to finance the revolution now. But of course, that was, you know, a silly talk. But anyway. We ended up starting to make quite a bit of money, and we started giving quite a bit of money away. By, I think, in late 70s and early 80s, we had we were giving as much as $8,000 a year away to various organizations, and we had people lined up for money, which is still something that WSA does at this point. In fact, we give it away in larger amounts than we did before. But in those days, we were very very successful. And we started, you know, really doing well. And so there was that also makes it easier to, you know, work in a collective situation when people are generally happy and they're making a reasonable salary. Also, before 79 and before 81, it was, you know, it was relatively easy to live in this country. You know, you didn't have to have much money, and rent wasn't that bad, food was reasonable, gas was cheap. It was just a lot easier since 79 and 81. It's been a lot harder to live. It's been, you know, the average person has to struggle a whole lot harder. I just know that a lot of people who worked at the pharmacy for relatively low wages in those days were happier. You know, they could take off, they could go out to eat, they could go to a movie, you know, they could own a car. That's much harder to do now because the wages have not risen as, you know, relatively to uh, to the upper wages in this country. And so those were kind of different times, so the collective worked pretty well. By 1983, by the time we were ready to make the move and we were ready to go uptown, there were lots of doubts about whether the collective would be able to survive at this new place, because we were going to have to hire more people. There was going to all of a sudden be this tremendous difference between the people who had been there for now 11 years, for people who had been there no years. But there was a group of people, and I was not among them, who wanted to continue the collective. It was a two-thirds. We didn't work with consensus. We worked with a two-thirds majority, which we found reasonable. And that meant different numbers under different, you know, quorums, different situations. So that, you know, people lost once in a while, but, you know, when the majority of people wanted something, that it happened that way. We ended up saying that we were going to continue our collective into the new business. I was kind of more interested at that point personally in dividing the business up and having like personal ownership with the business, because I didn't really feel like I could function. You know, the larger a group of people gets, the harder it is to function in a collective. Plus, we had all these kind of cracks coming into the facade now. It was like pharmacist salaries were going up, workers who had been there 1 year, well, do they get the same vote as somebody who had been there 11 years? And then we decided, well, we'd give 3 votes to the people who had been there so many years and 1 vote here. And after a while, your collective falls apart because nothing is really fair anymore. And that was already starting to happen in the very early stages of the move to the Gorham Street location. And I was kind of opposed to, you know, even having to deal with that. I thought we should just, you know, divvy up the place and just have, you know, private ownership and just leave it like that. But I lost out. And in the process, we, you know, made this move. We instituted kind of an alternative healthcare section upstairs. At the same time that our prescription business was actually going down, Walgreens had taken over the Rannenbaum stores. All the HMOs in town had their own pharmacies. There was lots and lots of competition in Madison. And we, at times, at the old pharmacy, we would fill 100 prescriptions most every day, 150 on, you know, really, really good days. We actually ended up in 1985 or 86, I can't remember what, with only about 30 prescriptions a day. And so if we hadn't made the move to the alternative healthcare area and the vitamins and all that stuff, we probably wouldn't have made it in that location. But that part of the business has continued to rise. And in the meantime, the Walgreens store on State Street closed. Not the store, but the pharmacy part of the store closed. So where there were a few more prescriptions that, you know, kept things going. And then recently, several years ago, I guess now, the store on the corner of the square where State Street meets the square closed up. And then in the last year, the pharmacy, the Walgreens over on University Avenue where the business school is now going up, closed. So we like outlasted all these places, and all of a sudden our business this last year has gone up, you know, 20, 30, 40% again, you know. So, you know, we kind of squeaked through that. The collective fell apart from 83 to 86, 87. It still kind of functioned. People were getting more and more unhappy with it. There were also some political splits. There was, you know, kind of a male-female stuff going on. There was kind of a gay-straight thing going on a little bit, and that just didn't fit very well into, you know, a lot of the collective stuff that was happening, and it looked like it wasn't going to last very long. In, I think it was about 88, we decided that we weren't going to function as a collective anymore, and we were going to explore some alternatives. We hired a person to kind of help us through this, which lasted for a while, but it didn't amount to anything. We kind of explored, you know, running ourselves as a regular business with a manager and, you know, trying
this
to go.
This person was that you hired, was it manager?
No, she was just kind of an arbitrator and someone who can maybe lead us through through the process of going into, you know, becoming a more, you know, conventional style business. But no one was really happy with that sort of thing, and we really didn't feel like we could do that. So then we decided that maybe the best thing to do was to compromise and you know, have a little bit of a more egalitarian work structure with some of the more conventional hierarchical approaches, and that was a co-op. So we ended up doing the legwork on you know, getting a co-op all together and changing our charter and changing all the organizational stuff and you know, going to the state and registering with the Secretary of State. It took about a year working with lawyers and stuff. So this last year it was about a 2-year process, I'd say, from 89 to 91, and now we are officially a co-op, and we're still, you know, kind of struggling with that structure a little bit, because we're also struggling with the growing business. I mean, when a $900,000 business grows 40% in 1 year, it's is changing its structure at the same time, it's tough to, you know, to make it go. And we're very busy, and, you know, having meetings and getting all this stuff together, you know, people have to spend an awful lot of hours, you know, trying to make this change. But we've done okay with it, and people are really quite happy with it in some ways.
I hear a lot of what you're talking about during the progression is a change from working with very little money or whatever and adjusting to the fact that you have more people, more changes, and more money. And do you want to say more about that?
Yeah, more money, more business, which means, you know, a growing business, the dynamics of a growing business are such that you have to change the structure of how you run it, you know. And as you're moving along, you know, you get one structure in place, and already you're past the point where that structure works anymore, so you got to try something else. I mean, logistics really is what I'm talking about here, you know. You have a telephone system that you think is going to work, and all of a sudden you need something else because it's not big enough anymore, because there's, you know, more activity, more people being hired. You know, we need, you know, more business. We have a catalog. We have, you know, just more, you know, more products coming in, and you have to have somebody to count the money and take the money to the bank. And all of a sudden you have, instead of having, you know, 8 or 9 people running around, you have 15, you know. And that makes a big difference in terms of communication. And for a couple of years, you know, it was tough because we had this, you know, kind of collective structure in place which everybody understood, but all of a sudden you don't have that, and it's kind of chaos. And then you have to make something out of this chaos in a growing business. It's been tough.
So it's tied up, really. It's been tied up in your philosophy, and that's an ongoing change of your philosophy. Is that what I'm trying to
say? Well, one of the things is the philosophy has remained somewhat the same during this time, because really the co-op that we're at now, in some ways, has the same sort of ideals as when we started. Having people take responsibility for their health care, giving them high quality, you know, as low a price products as we can, making them feel that we're not ripping anybody off, giving, you know, a good amount of service. Those things were pretty much the same, and those were also ideals that went through the collective situation. I would have said the philosophy might have changed somewhat if we would have privatized it a little bit. But since the general kind of grain of the pharmacy was to not privatize it, it ended up kind of, the philosophy ended up being somewhat the same. I think we're doing some of the same things we did 10 years ago. It's just that we're doing them in a slightly different way with different organizations. But there's still, you know, a lot of political activism. It's true that people are a little bit more concerned about the wages they make, because it's tougher economic times, which is understandable. Also, we started getting a group of people who were really not interested in running as a collective. They didn't want to spend hours hassling over these things. They were making their $6 or $7 an hour, and they wanted to go home, you know. They didn't want to mess around with another 4-hour meeting. But on the other hand, you know, we're having these meetings anyway, you know, because that's the nature of a business if you want it to be run by a group of people instead of a boss. And so we're doing it in a different way, and people are a little bit happier about it, because I guess in the collective that, you know, was kind of a false collective, because there were certain groups of people that had power because of their voting versus other people who hadn't been there very long. Now there's a specific number of hours that you have to work before you become a member of the co-op, and you have to work, there's so many hours that you have to work before you're eligible to be on the board. But, you know, everybody knows what the structure is, and they're willing to work with that, and so people are a lot happier about that. And plus, since we're quite successful again, at least people are, getting raises once in a while and, you know, doing a little bit better. But one thing I must say is that our rent in the new location is very, very high, and that really takes a lot of resources away from, you know, giving people a little bit better, you know, more of a living wage and giving them a little bit extra benefits. The pharmacists do okay. Somebody who's been, you know, like me, I've been there 20 years. I do okay in relative terms. I probably get less than the average pharmacist makes somewhere else with less benefits, but it's still, I do pretty well. For new workers that come in, you know, the State Street wage is pretty low. And so it takes a while to kind of work yourself up to a wage which is, you know, quite good. And a lot of people are, you know, people are having a lot more trouble doing that nowadays because of the, the tough life living that goes on economically now.
Are you seeing a change in the type of person that comes in and gets a job?
Well, there are a lot of different types of people that come in, but we seem to hire a certain type of person, you know. That's the way it works. So, people have to say the right things, and people have to, when they get interviewed, they have to be willing to work in a cooperative structure. And we let them know exactly what they're getting into. And most of the people want that sort of experience. They don't want a boss. They want a more egalitarian workplace. They want to work with products that are a little bit more natural, or they want, you know, they have some ideals in mind in terms of their work situation. And so a lot of people end up staying pretty long period of time. Our average worker probably stays there 5 or 6 years, which is, you know, which leads to a good amount of longevity for any business. And also for somebody in my position, I have, you know, my work is not, I'm not the only one that can do my work. I can take off a day here and there. I can, probably even take a leave of absence. I was very ill this last year for about 3 or 4 months. So I was able to do that, come back to my job, people filled in for me, and it worked out. So there are some advantages to working in a more cooperative workplace. There's no doubt about that. And people who we hire tend to want to do that more often. So if you're not, you know, if you don't have some entrepreneurial type or some, person who wants to, you know, be boss, it works out.
How do you see the staying power of employees affecting your business?
Well, The longer your people stay, the better trained they become, the more confident they become, the greater assets they are to your business, and the better it will be for your business to draw customers into a business like this. Our business is information in some ways. I mean, we sell the products, but people want information about that, and I think WSA has always had sort of a reputation for going out of their way to give a person, you know, the information that they need, whether we have to look it up or whether, you know, people know it or whatever. And I think that's really important. And so the longer you have someone in that position, the better off the business is, I think. The bad part about it is that in a small business like this, you can only reach a certain position with that, you know, you can only reach a certain level, and sometimes people leave because they can't really make they don't see themselves making a long-term living with it. you know, they stay for a length of time, but it's not, you know, they decide that that's not really what they want to do. But most everybody has a very good experience with it. But now we're finding people, in the last 2-3 years, we're finding more people who are, you know, looking at the lower level jobs in the pharmacy as being situations that they may end up staying at. And that's the first time we've had people who have looked at their job situation like this. And so they're willing to take more charge of the situation, and hopefully they'll get the wages that they want somewhere down the line, and we'll be able to afford to do that. But you know, in any small business, there's a limit to how much you can pay people. If people stay for a long time, you can't necessarily raise the wages much higher, because there's labor costs are the greatest, pretty much the greatest cost that we have. And there's a limit to the labor costs. Otherwise, you don't make it. But certainly, people are plugged into longevity a lot more now than they were before. Even, people expected to leave in the 70s, and we got a very high quality person to work there all the time. I mean, some of these people went on to become doctors and chiropractors and lawyers, and this was just a kind of a stop-off point for them. So we really always had really good people working there.
I'd like to hear what you think about WSA's place in the community now, how you see it as a place in the community.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's evolved over the years, but I would say that we're different things to different people. For me personally, I've been so much involved in the alternative healthcare area of the pharmacy. In other words, the area that is knowledgeable about herbs and diet and fasting and homeopathy and all these kind of non-mainstream sort of holistic health modalities. That I think we have a place in the community in that area. There are many, many people who come to us to get information about alternative healthcare. We give references to physicians in the area, to various people who want to maybe go see a good chiropractor or a massage therapist or whatever sort of thing they need for what we perceive as their needs are. I'm kind of biased in that direction a little bit, and I think, yeah, we have an important place in the community. I hear that all the time from people who come back from other parts of the country who are passing through, and they're saying, oh, wow, I wish we had this there, because this is really a good service, and, it's a really a good thing that you're doing here. We also, I think, do that on the level of more conventional medicine. In other words, I think we give pretty good information about prescription drugs and over-the-counter drugs. I think we're pretty aware of some of the issues around that, and we tend to be we try to be more objective about that than just trying to sell a product. And I think people do appreciate that, do appreciate our objectivity in that area, and so we probably have a place like that. And we have a lot of people who call us on the phone who might not come down, who want a different, maybe a slightly different point of view about the medicine they're taking. So, I feel that that's a place that's maybe unique to us here in Madison. We also, have a place in I think certainly in many organizations in the community, in their eyes, we're people that support alternative organizations with money. And we don't give huge amounts of money, but we support, Wart Radio, we support Madison Aid Support Network, Women's Transit Authority. We've given money to battered women's shelters, to a wide range of alternative publications that we give ads to, but wouldn't necessarily have to advertise in, but we support them with their money that way. So we do a lot of things, not necessarily with getting new business in mind, but supporting other groups. And so we feel good about that. Over the years, we've supported various co-ops when they've moved, and I think that You know, those are good things for a business to do, and we always felt good about doing that. Most of these businesses, of course, have been, you know, kind of alternative-oriented businesses. And if they're not alternative-oriented, we wouldn't probably support them, although we've given, you know, occasionally we've bought tickets to tickets from the policemen for some circus for underprivileged kids and stuff like that. We've gone that direction too. But you know, most of these things we feel are, you know, somewhat health oriented, whether it's mental health or physical health or whatever. So I think, you know, I think we're known for that, and we have a place for that in the community. Yes.
And what do you see for the future of the pharmacy? Do you see changes?
Well, you know, I'm hoping now that we're going to settle down and not have any more changes for a while. I mean, our business grew so much last year that it's getting to be a point where we just have to keep up with it. And it feels good to, you know, to have a lot of business, but too much business gets to be overwhelming too. So I'm hoping that we're going to stabilize our business for a while. And, you know, there's talk for somewhere in the future maybe finding another building to go to, because right now where we are, we have a two-tier structure, and we have a regular pharmacy with kind of the more conventional things, products downstairs, and upstairs we have an area that, you know, sells the health foods and sells herbs and vitamins and that sort of stuff. And it's not a very convenient way to do a business on two floors like this. The communication is difficult. The staffing is more of a problem. So, you know, we'd like to be able to find a building that will, you know, suit our needs, that would be on one floor. But whether we're going to find that in a location near and around State Street, I don't know. And I just, you know, we kind of like to buy a building maybe or something like that. There certainly is room to expand. I mean, if you look at the alternative healthcare industry, for instance, you know, in terms of practitioners, in terms of the number of products available, in terms of the number of people that are interested, this is a growing area. This is an area that grew during what I would consider a relatively conservative time in the history of this country. And what you have coming together is the old, you know, kind of the old, more traditional Republican point of view about, you know, get government off my back and give people a choice to do what they want. You should not interfere with my health care. It's none of your business kind of thing, you know, kind of more the right-wing sort of stuff that was popular in the 30s, 40s, 50s. With the, you know, kind of 60s back to the earth kind of left-wing hippie movement, which was also oriented towards, you know, that sort of thing, let me do what I want. You know, I want natural products. I want to have a choice to what I do, to do what I want. These two forces now, you know, have come together in the healthcare movement as a fairly significant and strong and increasing movement towards, you know, kind of an alternative and more preventative way of looking at healthcare. So, I see the business. I mean, this is my own personal view, but I see the potential for, you know, business increasing as time goes on, not decreasing. I mean, there's going to be more people interested in this sort of stuff, not less. Most of these things are very helpful for people. They work. They're relatively less costly. There are more and more practitioners who have patients who are getting good results. They're interested in that. So it's a, you know, it's in some ways it's a burgeoning sort of situation. So that's what I see the future as. There may be some problems with that future. There are already some hints of that, in the sense that the FDA and other people are trying to regulate what can be said about these products, how they can be marketed, what's on the label, and all of that. And they do have some potential to squash it. But on the other hand, probably you know, business will probably win out. That's the way it works here, you know, and so I'm not real pessimistic that they're going to be able to stop, that the medical establishment and the kind of more traditional, chemical approach to healing is going to be able to stop this movement, because it itself is, in some dire straits now, and is getting to be too expensive. People are unhappy with it. Doctors are unhappy with it. So people are looking for something new, and this is filling that void to a certain degree. Plus, if this country wants to be healthy and it wants to save money, I think it has to go towards a more preventative approach to things, and that's basically what we offer at the pharmacy. Our motto right now is, helping you take responsibility for your health. It's somewhat corny, I suppose, but and in fact, there's some talk about changing it because it's been there for such a long time. But in some sense, that's really what it's all about. I mean, to me, I see, paying more attention to your health as being important for the future, not only in terms of your own health, but just in terms of thinking that, doctors are not the people who are going to heal you, and that you can't go into a doctor's office and when they don't get what you want, that you can, sue them and make their, make their insurance rates go up and all that. That, people have to start having a different attitude about things. And so I feel like we're, kind of in the forefront of that idea, at least as a business in Madison. And we've combined, both aspects of that business. We've combined the more traditional, kind of chemical-oriented stuff with the alternative stuff. And I think in that way we've probably, maybe, I hope so anyway, have more credibility, let's say. People are willing to listen to us because we kind of, know a little bit about both sides of the fence.
Okay, Peter, we're going to talk a little bit more now about your personal involvement, and if you could just touch on some of the more rewarding aspects of your involvement and your disappointments and frustrations.
Well, over the years, some of the rewarding things have been, some of the real interesting and, nice people that I've worked with and become friends with and have contact with yet over, many years. It's always nice to talk to people that that you have a fairly close relationship with. And in terms of the workplace, I like to be able to, help people figure out stuff about their health and, get some small success with that. I mean, I'm not a physician, so I don't, have to deal with a lot of, chronic illnesses and that sort of stuff. Although a lot of times I'll send somebody to a person who makes a contact with a physician that they can really work with, and they start improving their health. So that's kind of rewarding in and of itself. But, we deal mostly with self-limiting sorts of illnesses and even on or injuries and that sort of stuff. And if I can, be of help and I get some positive feedback about a remedy I've suggested or something like that, that's about as much of a reward as you can get. Or somebody says something nice about you because you've given them a good piece of information that they didn't know before. People are appreciative of those sorts of things. So, my rewards are they're good enough for me to continue to work at the job at this point anyway. And, I make a good enough salary. I have some time off. My work schedule is extremely flexible. So those are always nice rewards. I work in a fairly cooperative situation with people who like to be there. It's not a workplace where people are always angry at each other, or they're angry at a boss, or they're talking negative about someone who's working with them. That just over the years has very rarely happened. Most people have been very cooperative in this work situation, and that feels good too. I mean, I talk to so many people who are very unhappy in their workplace. It's because they don't have any power in it, and they don't have any say in it, and they can't really, talk about, they can't really be negative about the boss because they might lose their job and those sorts of things. I've never experienced that in my work over the last 20 years. So that's got to be rewarding in and of itself, particularly when you talk to other people who are not happy in their jobs. And I kind of like my job.
I think I can guess what your answer to this is then, but if you had to do over again, would you? Do you think you'd start again?
Yeah, I'd like to, you know, I certainly would do it. I think I'd change some things. I think it's been quite frustrating the last few years through these great changes that have taken place since the collective kind of broke apart. I feel like for me personally, I would have I like the cooperative nature of things, and I think if I were a boss, I'd be a decent boss, and I think I could make work fun for people. I would have liked to have a little bit more control over the business. Sometimes it seems, somewhat chaotic to me. And I think I would have somehow worked with an ownership sort of situation. I think I would have, I think there's just more, I mean, I think people can relate to that in some ways a lot better. It's a lot harder to work in sort of a nebulous situation where you aren't really responsible for the money part of it. It makes, there's a certain atmosphere there that kind of removes you from responsibility to a certain degree. And I think if you own a business, I've had the experience of owning a couple of businesses during the time that I've worked at this pharmacy for, 20 years, during the time when I was gone. And I enjoyed that a lot, to have a little bit more control over it. And I certainly, would have a little bit more of a modified structure than we have now. I don't know if, I don't know if the co-op is really the best situation for me as a person to work in now. I'm also finding myself in a situation where I've been, at this business for 20 some years, and I'm working with a lot of people who could be my, sons and daughters, and I would like to be working with people who are more my age. I don't have as much in common with the people that I'm working with now on a social level. So over the years, there's been less and less social contact with people I've been working with, whereas in the early times of the pharmacy, they were more my age, and we would hang out together. I just don't do that with people my age because, I'm just an old guy now, So that's one of the frustrations and, disappointments, but I suppose that's the way it is, as people grow older and stay with a business like this. But if I, if I would have had a little bit more control over it, I could also have people who are, my age around a little bit more. I do have a couple people, but it's quite a bit different.
Not like the collective years.
Not like the collective years, no.
Mm-hmm. I was just wondering if you wanted to... There's a lot going on right now in terms of whether or not the Congress is going to pass some sort of health plan so that there's universal health insurance. There's AIDS, the AIDS epidemic, and I'm just wondering if you personally feel like you it's impacted on the business in any particular way, or you see it impacting in the future in a significant way.
I really have, if you're talking about national health insurance, I have really mixed feelings about it. One of the reasons is that if national health insurance means that there's only going to be one sort of kind of health care available, which is chemical medicine with surgery and radiation treatment, I can't really get behind it. It just, no matter whether people are insured or not insured, from my point of view, the alternative part of healthcare has a lot to offer in terms of prevention and in terms of people taking responsibility for their healthcare and people being more aware of their bodies and people, feeling healthy as opposed to only treating illness, So, If that were made a part of it, or that were, open to it, and insurance companies would start, or the national government would start covering for those sorts of things, and people had the option to use those things, I would not stand in the way of that. But on the other hand, if it's going to close things down even more than it is, and it's going to, put people down, a shoot that doesn't have anything to do with alternative healthcare, I can't, you know, I really can't get behind that, no matter, you know, what you're saying about, you know, 37 million people being, you know, not being insured at this time. It'd be nice if they were insured, and I think that would be all right, but let's insure them, but let's not force everybody to do that and not have the alternative available to them. I think even in terms of insurance companies covering this, homeopathic remedies and herbs are very inexpensive. They're so much less expensive than herbs. It seems like the insurance companies would want to start covering this and want to start covering the alternative practitioners who offered these services, because in the long run they're going to be a lot cheaper and people are going to be healthier. People are much more aware of their diets. They're much more aware of you know, what they shouldn't do, like smoke. They shouldn't, you know, eat more fiber. And they're people who really, you know, want to pay attention to what's going on. And I think to you know, force them because of cost to go to a more expensive healthcare modality, I think is not the right way to go. I'm hoping that, you know, in the next number of years, as these things are debated, you know, maybe insurance companies will start looking at these things. I've noticed that in the mainstream media, even, they're starting to talk about alternative healthcare. This week there was a five-part series on the Good Morning America show dealing with, you know, plants and botanical medicines and mind-body sort of things that you know, people are starting to explore in terms of healthcare. And there's a lot more to there's just a lot more to healthcare than just taking chemical medicines, or, you know, taking some organ out of your body, or, you know, getting zapped with radiation. That's just not all the answer. And as the, you know, as the price of healthcare goes up, and there's more expensive drugs and more side effects for drugs, and there's more machinery that does great diagnostics but doesn't really do it, you know, has no answer for correcting, I think these things are, you know, these things are going to be inevitable to at least be a part of some sort of system. And if that is, I'll support that.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you want to say about the pharmacy? There's anything that you feel hasn't been said?
No, not really. I don't think I, you know, I can't really think that. Trying to think over the years what, if there's kind of some thread that is going through it, but it's the only thread that I have is, you know, my own involvement. Really, it's changed so much that you know, I can't really, and the fact that it's grown, that's the only thing. I mean, are you interested in maybe hearing about talking about what sort of, you know, money it grosses and what sort of profit margins it has and that sort of stuff?